Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Aghvayi. The uprisings in the Middle East is a result of a people's movement against monarchies, which so far has toppled some regimes. But one country that has taken matters into its own hands is Saudi Arabia, who's resisting reform. Well, in this news analysis, we will look at Saudi's role in other countries in the region, countries like Bahrain, Yemen, and Egypt, and why Nobel Peace Laureate Tawakkol Karman has accused Saudi Arabia of meddling in Yemen's internal affairs.
Before the revolution, since 33 years, they made many crises in Yemen. They didn't make any partnership with Yemen as a country. Just for with individuals, people and tribes, because they don't want country, not just democracy. Country in Yemen, they don't want.
Karman made the comments in a meeting with British parliamentarians in London. She also accused the Saudi rulers of corruption.
Do I blame Saudi? No. They did their rule to protect their kingdom. Their bad and corrupt authority. I blame.
Karman said her countrymen should not expect Saudi Arabia to help Yemen, because Riyadh has constantly been after creating tension in the country. Less than a month ago, Yemeni ruler Ali Abdullah Saleh signed a power deal in Riyadh. Saudi Arabia and other Persian Gulf states brokered a deal that called on Saleh to step down in return for immunity from prosecution. Yemeni protesters are angry with the deal. They say the new government is a far cry from the revolutionary demands because it incorporates the Saleh regime's remnants. They say Saudi Arabia is plotting to hijack their revolution. Saudi Arabia has already been accused of meddling with several regional countries' internal affairs. Saudi King Abdullah indicated his opposition to the protests and revolutions affecting the Arab world. Riyadh gave asylum to deposed President Zain al-Abidine Ben Ali of Tunisia and offered support for ousted Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. It also sent military troops to crack down on the revolution in Bahrain. Many believe Saudi Arabia has been busy abroad to ward off a revolution at home. Earlier this year, Saudi King Abdullah announced a series of job and housing benefits for citizens amounting to nearly $11 billion. However, the winds of change are already blowing through Saudi Arabia. Anti-regime protests are now held on a regular basis in the oil-rich monarchy, where protests or political gatherings of any kind are not tolerated.
Let's get the conversation started. Let me introduce our guest, editor from the Pan-African Newswire, Abayomi Azikiwe, joins us from Detroit, Michigan. And we have the director of the IGA, Aliol Ahmad, who joins us from Washington. Mr. Azikiwe, I'd like to start off with you. Let's go back a little bit. Early on in the Arab Spring, Saudi Arabia was accused of a counter-revolution. Why were they accused of that?
Well, first of all, they have supported some of the most repressive regimes, not only in the Gulf, but also in other areas of the Arabian Peninsula and North Africa. They were very close allies with Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. They have sent troops into Yemen, as well as Bahrain. Now, in Egypt, the government there under Hosni Mubarak did collapse. There have been parliamentary elections, and there is a new political dispensation that's coming into play in Egypt. But in Yemen, the revolution there has been frustrated, and it has a lot to do with the involvement of both Saudi Arabia as well as the United States. Saudi Arabia, of course, acting in many ways on behalf of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. And also in Bahrain, where many people have been killed, many atrocities have been committed, there have been allegations of destruction of religious institutions in that country. So they have, to a large degree, played a counter-revolutionary role in the region. And if you compare Saudi Arabia with other countries in the region, for example, the Islamic Republic of Iran, where there is a parliament, there are elections periodically, there are presidential elections as well, there's very vigorous debate as far as we know, within the Iranian political system. If you compare that to Saudi Arabia, where there's a monarchy and there's essentially no debate, where women are totally suppressed in regard to just basic democratic rights, how can the United States State Department justify supporting Saudi Arabia and then at the same time engaging in all types of provocative actions against the Islamic Republic of Iran? So those contradictions are very much a part of U.S. foreign policy towards the Middle East.
So pretty much they would prefer if things were as they were before the Arab Spring, the order to be the way it was, because it appeared like they were in reactionary mode with this counter-revolution. Ali al-Ahmad, are they still trying to slow down the momentum of the Arab uprisings to shape the new regional order to their liking? I mean, what is it that they want? What is at stake?
The Saudi monarchy really has taken the aggressive posture in terms of dealing with the fallout of the Arab Spring around the region, especially in the neighborhood. The government or the monarchy has spent billions of dollars and put its army of loyalists in these countries, from Kuwait to Bahrain to Egypt and Tunisia, you name it, and of course in Yemen, into action to stop the spread of the Arab Revolution from reaching its borders, to stop the people's push for greater freedom and democracy, to undermine any democratic regime in existence. So you are seeing here a government that really is spending a lot of money and effort into counter-revolution, aided by certain Western governments who have done that in Bahrain and Yemen specifically, where these Western government has given the regimes there are really an open ticket so they can continue unruling without challenge, without condemnation, without freezing of assets, without any calls from the West for these regimes to step aside and answer the call of their people. So really they are doing it to protect themselves in the first place, but also to expand their influence, as we saw in Egypt with them funding the Salafis in order to get greater say into Egyptian domestic policy.
Well, it sounds like they're busy at work. Let me introduce Professor of Law at Georgetown University, Daoud Khairullah, who joins the conversation now. Daoud Khairullah, historically, it has been a regional order, hasn't it, that has been defined by an alliance of moderate autocracies aligned with the United States and Israel. Is that changed, or is it under threat?
I don't know whether I understood the question or I heard the question where there was some interruption. You were saying, would you please repeat the question?
Well, we're talking about these modern countries in the region who are aligned, and Saudi Arabia is obviously aligned with them in terms of the foreign policy and that alignment with the United States.
Okay. When you take Saudi Arabia and take the Gulf state, the economic Gulf states, none of them, it's almost the unthinkable that any one of them would accept participatory government, democracy, rule of law, fighting corruption, fundamental freedoms, all these basic rights, all these are anathemas to those forms of regimes. And unfortunately, they are the ones now that champion the counter-revolutions in the Arab world in general. And what is happening in Yemen or in Bahrain or even in Syria, the way they are twisting things in Syria, in Egypt, everywhere, they are doing what they could do in self-defense. It cannot be thought that these regimes would accept democracy on their doors.
And how far have they gone? Let's give an example here about the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. They invited Morocco and Jordan to join them. I mean, Morocco is not part of the Persian Gulf, giving them financial assistance and also a bid for them to be a member.
Well, this is a coalition of kings and princes for their own kind of democracy against all the republics and other regimes in the area. But what is so obvious is that they have a vested interest in protecting a status quo there. And unfortunately, the U.S. is their great supporter, well, it claims that it is in favor of democracy and change.
Well, let's talk about one of the Persian Gulf islands that obviously the U.S. Has been backing the monarchy of, and that's Bahrain, connected by a bridge to Saudi Arabia. Mr. Azakiwi, this question to you. Riyadh has made Bahrain the first great battlefield of the counter-revolution. Their forces are still there. They're still silencing the protests, so much so in the past 24, 48 hours, a number of instances to have happened in the continuing line of instances. Why is Bahrain so important for Saudi Arabia, and not so much in terms of importance, but to be at the top of the list to send its troops into the island?
Well, first of all, the U.S. Has military interests there in Bahrain. Also, they, as the other guest said, they do not want any type of revolutionary movement to come to power in any of the states throughout the entire Gulf. And this is why they're pursuing a policy of total suppression of the democratic movement in Bahrain as well as in Yemen as well. And I think it's very important that people recognize this, because the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia goes back at least until 1933 under the Roosevelt administration. And a lot of it is based on the supply of Saudi oil to the United States oil industry. They have a huge reserve of oil there. It's estimated perhaps 25% of the known world reserve of oil. And the United States, of course, is heavily dependent upon the oil industry to shore up its economic system. It has been like that now for several decades.
Could I ask
let me jump in here.
I'd like to really find this out, because it's really interesting to me, Mr. Azakiwi. Sorry for interrupting. The Fifth Fleet there, so U.S. soldiers are there, and then you have the monarchy, Saudi-backed forces suppressing the Bahraini people. How does that work?
Well, they give them the go-ahead, obviously. We don't hear hardly any information in this country through the mainstream media about the violation of human rights that are taking place in Bahrain. And we feel very strongly that this is clearly connected with the fact that you do have the U.S. Fifth Fleet that is based there, and it is serving as a regional police force to make sure that the political situation throughout the Gulf and in other countries in the Arabian Peninsula does not get out of hand.
Okay.
That's why we've had such a strong and consistent suppression of the democratic movement in Yemen and Bahrain.
All right, let me bring in Ali Al-Ahmad in here. Ali Al-Ahmad, let's look at what has occurred in terms of Yemen and how Saudi Arabia shaped events there. Tell us, first of all, how much of a factor was it in terms of Saudi Arabia involvement? And really, what has transpired is kind of mind-boggling, because you have this, what's set as an example of Saudi achievement, an ex-president, Saleh, responsible for the killing of hundreds, then offered immunity, and then have his VP become president, while the Yemenis are out there still opposing this. I mean, did they do it for themselves when you have a country still opposing what has transpired?
What really we have seen in Yemen is the so-called the GCC initiative that has really derailed or tried, attempted to derail the Yemeni revolution and to divide the opposition, is not to remove Ali Abdullah Saleh, but to remove the person of Ali Abdullah Saleh, not his regime. Everyone else is the same. The people who control the security forces, who are giving the orders to shoot at protesters, who are controlling the decision in Yemen, are still the same. Ali Abdullah Saleh is still the president of Yemen. Let's not forget that. Yes, right now we see that his deputy is taking the lead, but officially Ali Abdullah Saleh is still the president And when he holds a meeting where his deputy is included in the meeting, Ali Abdullah Saleh is the chair of that meeting. We saw that on Yemeni news agency. So Ali Abdullah Saleh is still the president. What the Saudi monarchy has done is to give the impression that Ali Abdullah Saleh has gone. Of course, they obviously offered him immunity, and they are spending money there to derail and divide the opposition to maintain the regime of Ali Abdullah Saleh at all costs. And that is really stealing the Yemeni revolution from the people and trying to break their spirit so they do not continue to demand rights. And like my colleague said, they are opposed to the building of a democratic, popular government, independent from regional and international hegemony. This is what really drives fear in the heart of not only the Saudi monarchy, but the rest of the monarchies, that one day there will be a successful, a stable, a democratic government anywhere in the neighborhood.
Okay, well, we have lots more countries to cover here, so let me move on. Daoud Khairullah, let's talk about Egypt. What is Saudi's intention there? I mean, if you can relate that to this argument, which I think you touched on, that Saudi Arabia doesn't want to have neighbors that have a democratic system in place that might threaten the political order back at home.
Look at the overall picture in the Arab Spring. You see that the most active members of the Arab Leagues are the Gulf Council. And they have the means in terms of money, means in terms of media that molds the public opinion. They are the designers of how things should move. In Egypt, they would promote a regime that would be minus the head of the regime, but being as close to the West, as close to the way Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries see things. And in Bahrain, they have allowed military intervention to suppress the revolution. Yemen,
point well taken. And we're running so short of time. How would this backfire on them, these Persian Gulf countries?
How is what?
How is it going to backfire on them? Because you have people being suppressed.
Well, eventually, I think it's inevitable that people would realize that they cannot live forever with suppressing facts, with corruption, with injustice, and with lack of control, in a sense. The people would eventually have to become self-ruling. Independence, sovereignty means the exclusivity of self-ruling. Participatory government is the essence of democracy. People sooner or later are going to realize that this widening gap between ruler and ruled has to be narrowed, and these regimes would have to change.
Okay.
And now they go under the guise of some religious movement.
And let me bring in Mr. Azikiwe. Again, I'm sorry to jump in there because we're almost out of time. Mr. Azikiwe, that means that Saudi Arabia, who's a monarchy, obviously doesn't want his political order, their political order, to be changed. So they're backing these monarchies. But how is that going to backfire on them, given what's happening on the ground? Does that mean that they are actually now in threat of their political order being changed back at home?
Yeah, I believe so. We've seen unrest inside Saudi Arabia as well in the recent period. And I think it's very important that the Iranian government and the Saudi government have held talks recently to deflect these attempts by the United States administration to escalate tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And I think that is very important. It's a very important development that has occurred recently. But yes, they want to prevent any real democratic change throughout the entire Gulf region.
And Ali Al-Ahmad, final question to you. Good reasons, do you think, to believe that Saudi Arabia might itself be caught up in the regional storm?
Absolutely. We are already seeing that. We saw last night, today, protests in different parts of the country. So we are going to witness I think we might need an igniter, one event that turns the turning point. But that country is not immune to the storm or to the Arab Spring. It will come sooner or later because all the ingredients for a revolution is present in that country.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Ali Al-Ahmad, director of IGA, talking to us. We had professor of law at Georgetown University, Daud Khairullah from Washington. Sorry if I jumped in your statements. We appreciate, however, your viewpoints. And also, I'd like to thank editor of Pan-African Newswire, Abiyomi Azikawi from Detroit, Michigan. And of course, you, the viewer, for watching another edition of Press TV News Analysis. Many thanks. Send us any comments or suggestions to newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikavit Tahli and the entire team, it's goodbye.